Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome to DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon, the unique blend of hunting, conservation, and the outdoor lifestyle, delivered in an entertaining, informative fashion that only a veteran outdoorsman can do. DSC Campfires is brought to you by DSC, Conservation, Education, and Hunter Advocacy. Hornady, accurate, deadly, dependable. Trigicon, brilliant aiming solutions. Ruger, rugged, reliable firearms. Burnham Brothers Game Calls, callingest calls made. Double Nickel Taxidermy, where hunting memories are preserved. Taurus, maker of the Raging Hunter and other fine handguns. Now here's your host, Larry Wysoon.
Very fortunate today to be with Mr. John Wilson with Double Nickel Taxidermy. And Dave Fox, thank you so much for the introduction. I know that you know John because he's been on our podcast several times in the past, and I got a feeling he's going to be there several times in the future. So welcome to the DSC Campfire, everybody, and let's welcome John Wilson to our campfire today. John, we're in August. Mm-hmm. It's hunting season coming up. What are you doing personally to prepare for hunting season? I mean, you've got to prepare for it from a business perspective, but also I know you like to hunt as well.
Yeah. It's there's a list of things and a litany of things. And, you know, it's a combination of preparing for the season. We have a couple of shows coming up that we participate in, the Texas Trophy Hunters. There's a couple local contests we participate in. So trying to get that underway, as well as making sure everybody's trained and ready to go here in the studio as far as what to do with intaking animals, tagging animals, just making sure everybody's up to speed. So a lot to do all at one time.
And that's probably a never-changing thing, too, because laws and regulations and everything changes, don't they?
It's constant, yeah. So one thing that doesn't change is everything changes.
Yeah. That is true, either fortunately or unfortunately. In my case, I think it's more unfortunate. Before we turn this thing on, we're talking about changes in technology and the leaps and bounds that technology makes. And I know some of the same things kind of happen within taxidermy business as well, too.
They do. You know, especially right now, you know, the crazy times we live in, we're getting a lot of communication from a lot of our suppliers. Things like foam, paint, glass eyes, things like that that down the supply chain, you know, are finally reaching the taxidermy world. So some of our suppliers going up 10-15% on their products. The waiting time to order, for example, our forms, our mannequins are urethane foam.
Right.
And so a lot of that stuff is nobody thinks about the little things like that in each industry, but there's things that are kind of hanging up these people and the tanneries, chemicals that we deal with on a daily basis, and it's making it kind of tough to navigate, you know, because our customers are obviously looking to us for answers, and a lot of times we don't have them.
Yeah, I know a lot of, you know, everybody wants to have their animals mounted, and then they want it back that week.
Now.
I bring it in Monday, I want it back Friday, and I want it this.
You know,
it doesn't quite work that way, but you guys have a fantastic turnaround time. But there may be some things, not only with you, but other guys who, there's going to be a little bit of delay because the equipment, or not the equipment, but the...
just the materials.
The materials that you need.
Yeah, it's going to be industry-wide, you know, and kind of always wondered if it was going to hit us, but here we are, it's starting to show its nasty head. But, you know, it's one of those things we believe in being proactive rather than reactive, and so we're, you know, those customers that may get pushed a month or two past their deadline, we reach out to them first, explain what's going on rather than... waiting for them to give us the call. Like, where's my deer?
I think that's an excellent way to do it, among other things. And it's very courteous, and it's a proper way to
do
things compared to somebody waiting, and then finally calls and says, well, it's still going to be another month or two.
Yeah.
And you hope it's only going to be a week or two, but it could be even longer sometimes.
Could be, yeah.
Interesting. As people are getting ready for this hunting season, What would you suggest? I mean, it looks like it's going to be a good antler year across the country. I've talked to several different people, both here where we live in Texas, but out of state. And with the exception of a few areas, it looks like they're going to be really good antlers this year.
There should be. You know, I don't get to hunt much, but people do send me a lot of pictures.
So
I live vicariously, you know, through them. But, you know, we get... people email trail camera pictures, and you know, this time of year we start getting them and can kind of tell what the deer will look like, and man, there have been some good ones this year.
What about from out of state? What do you anticipate this year? I know there's some CWD scares and all that kind of thing. Is that going to affect people bringing capes and antlers back? What you're hearing? Or?
It shouldn't. We've had some inquiries, people hunting out of state, and what should we do? And so always tell them to kind of reach out to the local area where they're hunting, make sure you got their regulations, you're up to speed on Texas's regulations. And if possible, most people hunt with an outfitter or a guide wherever they're going. Get the animal skinned, you know, salted, whatever they can do to get it as far along in the process as possible. They don't have to mess with any of the, you know, the disease transmission.
Exactly. What about, is it still okay to freeze a hide? I mean, to get as much meat off?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then get the hide frozen?
Yeah, and we still get a lot of the, I call them kind of the do-it-yourselfers that, man, they're going to go out and guide their own hunt and harvest the animal, skin it, quarter it, down to the skull. So we kind of walk through them. We have some little pamphlets we give them to kind of coach them through how to do those things. Always tell them to check regulations and laws, and you know, there's all kinds of stuff ever changing on that field. So
yeah, I get a feeling it's going to be a little bit more ever changing as we move forward as well too. What about I'm going to New Mexico to supposedly hunt for a management bull elk on the Mescalero Apache Reservation. Hopefully that all works out. Right now it looks like it might well do that.
Yeah.
When I get ready, I mean, I'm going to bring back the cape, I'm going to bring back the horns, hopefully some meat. Or hopefully meat, as much as all the rest, to be honest with you. Any kind of precautions I need to be aware of that you can think of, just coming back into Texas? Or
you know, I don't know of any off the top of my head. I would definitely check into Texas Parks and Wildlife.
Just
just kind of do your homework on that and make sure there's nothing you need to do. We've had in the past game wardens come knocking our door looking for, you know, Joe Bob, and he had a couple years ago, we had a mountain lion that he had a hunting license, but he didn't have I think they called it a pelt tag or something, and so they came and confiscated his mountain lion.
Yeah, there's some of those little middle tags and all those kind of things. Again, and these regulations change from year to year. The best thing you can do, as far as I'm concerned, is even if you're hunting with an outfitter or guide, right before you go, call that particular state game department or wildlife department, and then the same thing where you live too. I mean, because there can be changes as well too. Bringing back skulls and antlers, pretty much a good idea to try to boil those things down and clean them as much as you can.
Yeah, clean them as much as you can. You know, obviously, if you're up in the mountains and, you know, you just don't have the facilities or the means to get something clean, you can do a lot by hand with a knife,
right.
You know, kind of clean out as much as you can and then bring it on back. But, yeah, definitely, you know, when you start talking about brain tissue and some of those, the soft tissues in the head, skull, that stuff, get as much as you can clean. Just one, you know, for whatever diseases there may or may not be, but two, it'll start stinking on you if you don't.
Yeah, so, that's a pretty good.
There's a practical approach to that too.
Yeah. There's a practical approach. You know, I know we're into a warming trend, whether it's warmers or whatever. I'm not going to go there with any of that. But yes, and things like an elk, they've got a great big head, they've got a big brain,
a lot of meat,
like
a
white-tailed deer or mule deer.
Yeah.
If you're going to transport that skull back, you know, you might want to figure out how to get the brain out of there and then wash it,
you know,
hot
you can,
water into it, or, you know, maybe some borax or something else to just kind of prevent a little bit.
You know, it's not hard, it's kind of messy, but, you know, sitting around, you know, after a hunt one evening or something, you can definitely sit down with a stick or two and a knife and pick away for a little while and get it cleaned up.
You know, me, that part of that's all the fun of it as well, too.
True.
I enjoy, like you say, sitting around and talking and having boiling water. And like with the skull, with the brain cavity, if I'm not going to cut the skull plate, you know, what I'll do is I'll find probably a coat hanger. You know, really mix that up, and then you can take some water and pour it in there, or you can take a water hose and spray it off. And some places they'll have high pressure water,
whatever.
And to me, an easy way to do that is we boil the skull as much as we can and take that high pressure water hose. It's amazing how much stuff comes off after you boil it and soft it up a little bit.
Work smarter, not harder.
Amen. So, going on the hunt. When you get ready to, if you can freeze this hide, it's a good idea to freeze it.
It is.
And so there you can put it in plastic, right?
Yeah.
But if you were going to have to, you were going to salt it, and maybe you're on a backcountry elk hunt or mule deer hunt where you've got to do something with a cape before you get back, you know, at camp, before you get back with the salt, what's the procedure there?
That's a great question. So salt is, you know, an age-old preservative. You know, the Egyptians use salt to preserve stuff. So it's been around a long time. It's tried and true. The thing with taxidermy is if you don't get all the meat and membrane off of the hide and you salt it, you're just salting the meat. You're not salting the skin.
Yeah.
And on the other side of that, when we get it in from the field, if it's been sitting in salt for a long time, it starts to dry out and harden, and then that prevents us from getting a lot of the meat and stuff off of the hide. So it's good. It's a good preservative. Use it, you know, just get your hide good and clean.
Yeah, what about splitting lips or turning ears?
That's a whole ball of wax there. But, yeah, you know, it's one of those things. There's a lot of videos on YouTube and online. You can see what that is. Basically, you need to open all the surfaces of the skin, the lips, the nose, the eyes, the ears. And the inside surface needs to be covered with salt.
Right. So as much meat.
As much of that stuff
as possible.
And after you do that, you'll definitely appreciate what tanneries do.
I'll tell you what, I've turned ears a lot of times in camps and all that kind of stuff, and it's so easy to put your finger through it, aren't they? But, you know, to me, one of the things that I used to do, and I had students that were kind of interns, and what I'd do is I'd get them to skin out doe heads, and where I knew we weren't going to probably mount the doe, but they learned how to skin the ear. They learned to get that feel as to how far you can push without breaking that total membrane. Yeah. And the same thing around the nose and in the mouth, too. Yeah. So
it's definitely an art. And, we do the same thing. We'll save a lot of the European mountain heads that come in. We'll skin the hide off, and then we'll just save the face skin, basically. And new people we have coming in, we use those to train with.
Yeah.
They cut a hole in it. They cut a hole in it. We make them sew it, so they learn.
Oh,
but
see, you know, I'll tell you what, though, after you had had the show serve a whole,
start paying a little more attention.
A whole lot more careful.
Yeah, you do.
Where you cut, how you cut, and those kind of things. Oh, yeah. Going to the hunt. Uh-huh. I mean, a lot of times, now my room, thanks to you, is pretty well full, and I don't have a whole lot of room, so I'm doing more skull mouse and things like that. But I'll address that real quickly. Even if you're not going to have it mounted, it's not a bad idea to bring that entire head skin and head to y'all.
You know, that's one of those things that, man, it's kind of it's becoming more prevalent. People get in a hurry. There's people that don't really know how to skin. So we'll get hides that, you know, somebody shot a trophy animal and they cut the neck because their granddad told them to cut the neck to bleed the animal out. And so we're always looking for skins, especially big whitetails. It's one of those things. We'll go through 50, 60 a year replacing hides from hunters that just either their hide was cut up, they shot them in the neck, something inevitably will happen. And
are the hair slipped because they didn't skin it quick enough?
Are they
something?
Shot and didn't find it till the next day?
And that, the beauty of people bringing in hides from different areas is that way you can match a hide from a specific area, because there are some little minor differences.
There are.
Correlations.
There are.
You know, in the hair coat, and not necessarily the hair coat, the hair color kind of thing.
Yep.
What about, where I want to go with all this is, years ago, or not that long ago, before I'd leave, I'd say, okay, if I'm going to shoot a deer, I want to have it mounted this way, turn it. Do you suggest people do that kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I always, you know, I think it's a good idea always to kind of do the leg work ahead of time if you got a deer you're wanting to shoot. Going into the hunt, kind of prepared for shot placement and the pose of the animal, treating the hide after, don't drag it on the ground. I mean, there's all sorts of things to think about that will affect the outcome as far as the mount goes. And that's what you're going to be looking at for the rest of your life.
So. Absolutely. Yeah, you mentioned something interesting is that maybe not so much with white-tailed deer on leaves, grass, but if you're dragging that thing over rocks or if you're dragging it over logs or some kind of stubble, you can lose a lot of hair that way.
You do. You know, and it's one of those things that dragging an animal, you're in a hurry, you're by yourself possibly, you're just trying to get the job done. But, you know, that dreaded phone call from the taxidermist is not a fun one to have.
Now, let's talk about pronghorn antelope a little bit. Because I'm going on a pronghorn antelope hunt. You've done fabulous work here on two pronghorn that I shot. What extra precautions? Because, to me, those are animals that look like they're looking for a reason to shed much hair as possible. The hair's kind of hollow, too.
Yeah, so. They're notorious for having issues tanning. Just they're real temperamental, temperature-wise, getting them washed and cleaned.
Right.
And yeah, the hair's hollow, and it just behaves differently from normal deer hair, elk hair. You can actually bend and kink the hair follicles, or the hair fibers. So it's just one of those animals. It's just,
and of course, their coloration is such with the tan and the very brilliant white that everything shows. Let's say I shoot an antelope this year, and for whatever reason, you get the head skin and would be the cape, get to be pretty bloody. What's the best procedure there to ensure that I don't end up with a mount that looks like a bloody mount?
Yeah, absolutely. If possible, which usually, you know, you go back to a hunting camp or a skinning area or something, you know, spray the animal off with cold water, warm water. Yeah. You know, wash it real good. You can even use a mild detergent like a Liquid Dawn a little bit just to get in there and kind of clean some of the residual blood and residue off of the hair itself. Yeah, it makes a big difference. And, you know, it's one of those things, the cleaner it is, the less likely you'll have bacteria problems starting to happen with having the hair slip as well. So keeping it clean is a good option if you can do it.
We're fortunate, I think, that, you know, we live now in an era where there is water in almost every camp.
There is.
It's not like some I remember years ago going on a hunt, and we'd been in a dry camp, and I mean, you were fortunate that you had enough water to drink for 4 or 5 days. So
yeah,
you took extra precaution and hopefully, you know, shot the animal where you didn't get a lot of blood on it.
But, yeah.
One of the coolest things, y'all mounted a Sitka blacktail deer for me.
Yeah.
That shot up in Alaska, kind of in the southeastern part. Mm-hmm. And after I shot that animal, the way we cleaned and cooled this animal down, we made a cut so that it was from the sternum, at the back of the sternum, mm-hmm. to the rib cage back,
right.
where you just kind of remove the heart, lung, you know, the mm-hmm. internal organs kind of thing. And there was a little bit of blood on the hide. And so what the guy did is he just tied a rope on it, threw it behind the boat, and for about 4 or 5 miles close to the shore, because there were killer whales and all kinds of stuff there, we didn't want to leave, and I was a little bit concerned about leaving the blood trail, but it was amazing how fantastic that salt water cleaned that deer out.
Man, that's
cooled it
great.
Down, and the cape, I mean,
it's a great
because
idea.
Of that,
yeah.
you cool that cape down, because they do have real thick hair.
Yeah, they
and
do.
So, I mean, but it cooled that animal down.
And that water's cold up there.
Oh, man,
yeah.
it's about an inch from freezing.
Yeah, I mean, that's ingenious. I mean, it's salt water.
Oh, God, it worked out absolutely perfectly. What about coyotes and bobcats? We're into a time frame where there's coyotes everywhere. Some of these hides are absolutely beautiful. And, of course, bobcat, depending on where you hunt, mm-hmm. whether it's, you have to be sure, again, check your local regulations,
right.
because I remember years ago in Kentucky during the time when we were hunting whitetail deer, until the almost whitetail season was over with, you could not legally take a bobcat.
No kidding.
But what about, I mean, those kind of things? What's the best way to prepare those if you bring them in whole if you can?
I'm absolutely.
Sure it's cool, but if not, what's the best way to skin one of those?
If you must skin one, I guess if you can imagine a bear, an old bear rug laying on your granddad's floor, you want to just skin down the belly, straight down the belly in a straight line, and then kind of out all four arms,
right.
and just peel the body out. If you got to leave the head in there, you can cut the head off at the neck, and just cool it, put it in an ice chest with ice. Or an refrigerator, and just keep it cool. But if not, if you're able to get it to us or a taxidermist fairly quickly, then don't skin it, gut it, nothing. Just put it in a trash bag, keep it as dry as you can,
right.
and keep it cold.
Yeah, maybe if there's blood on it, kind of wipe the blood off, kind of thing.
Same philosophy. Uh-huh. Just keep it clean as you can, you know, spray it off with a mild detergent or something. And
so it doesn't hurt to wash them with a mild detergent?
No.
Cool.
We've experimented with a lot of stuff over the years and what works, what doesn't. Talked to other taxidermists that have been around for 30, 40 years and go to seminars. And, Liquid Dawn's a really good detergent to use, and you don't need to. I'm not saying you need to soak it in liquid Dawn, but you know, a couple drops in a gallon of water or so, and it's a natural degreasing agent. And
top everything else. You're right. I didn't think about
that. It's just a good general use thing in the taxidermy world.
Okay, now we've got the mount to the taxidermist. We've decided how we want it to look.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this in the past. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've got a spot on the wall, and I want that deer to look to his right,
mm-hmm.
which would be to my left. So when I come and talk to you, and I said, the beauty of it is here, you've got heads, you can go, you can go, I can't like this, like that. That's the benefit of great hair, you can say that. But let's say I have it shipped in here, uh-huh. and you go, okay, tell me how you want it mounted. You want it left, right, and you go, I don't know. Which way do I want it? You know?
Yeah.
And so
That's the kind of the age-old issue that we... And it's getting more prevalent because we get a lot of hunters that kind of come in, drop off the deer. We never meet them. They're out of state, you know, or out of town. And so we kind of... We have to kind of do like some role-playing here. And you know, the way we say it is, if you were the deer or the...
Or whatever the animal is.
Antelope, elk, whatever. If you were that animal... Which way would you be looking?
Right.
So it's from the animal's perspective. Things to consider. Usually a lot of people don't know how they want it mounted. You know, we ask, kind of walk them through a checklist and talk them into the answer and that they want. And, you know, where are you putting it? Do you have any other mounts? Mm-hmm. How are they posed? Where in the room is it situated? Is it going up high? Is it going, you know, eye level?
Right.
We look at the animal itself, and one side may be stronger than the other.
Right.
We
exactly.
may want to accentuate something yeah. and that we can do with the pose. It may be something where, well, all my mounts are upright, and I want something a little different. So let's do something different. So we give them some options as far as like sneaks and different poses.
Yeah, and you
so,
can send them to your website too.
Yeah, that's yeah, to absolutely to kind of see what we're right. trying to describe. But usually people know what they want. They just need to be asked the right questions.
Right,
and they can arrive where they want it.
To me, you can put so much into a deer by the position of the ear oh. or the animal. So let's talk about that a little
yeah.
bit. Is that something that, you know, when there may be an occasion where I come to you and say, okay, John, because of where this mount's going, uh-huh. I really want the ears to do this, or I really want to accentuate yeah. the spread, so I may want to put the ears back. But, you know, years ago, there was one pose, and that was pretty much the yeah. animal was straight oh, looking yeah. at you, and his ears were in a very erect position. Yeah. But that's not, deer very seldom are any length of time doing that. You know, they're always
moving.
There.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that. We kind of geek out on it, but it's one of those things where we study the expression of deer or any animal we're right. working on, but the expressions with the ears say a lot. And, you know, by pinning them back or having them alternating, you know, if you study deer, it means different things, and they do different things, and you
exactly.
can kind of accomplish different expressions. And, you know, we get people that want a big, bad deer, you know, big buck and muscular and mean looking. And, you know, you can, a lot of that is in the ears and how they're held. And you can just use the expression of the ears to kind of portray a demeanor
exactly.
with the deer. Yeah.
And to me, there's some deer that just have that demeanor of being very, very aggressive.
Right,
or,
yeah.
You know, are really spooky yeah. kind of thing. And to yeah. me, those are the ones where, you know, those ears are constantly working back and forth. One of them's going forward, one of them's going backward. They may both go back, but there's never any length of time where a deer stays in a certain
yeah.
position.
You know, and it's funny, in taxidermy, you know, we try to be as natural as possible, but on the other hand, you know, people want, a lot of times they want a pretty mount. And yeah. so we kind of fight the battle of, do we make it anatomically correct or do we make it pretty? And
yeah.
So
well, you guys do an absolute job of both.
We try to walk that line, but it's, you know, it's tough because a lot of the things that people perceive in their mind they want their mount to look like, you know, the animal just may not really naturally do that. So we try to walk that line and you know, give the customer what they want, but at the same time make it as correct as possible.
Well, I mean I'm a stickler for anatomy and I'm a stickler for expression because
sure.
deer really are individuals. They're just like people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's some that do something a certain way and some that don't. And so to me, what I like about, we just talked about a mount that you're doing for us now. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, matter however you think yeah. that deer,
sure.
number one, looks best or how, you know, on his ears. You know, if he's one of those that you think is really curious all the time,
yeah.
moving forward, if not, in the position of the ears and,
yeah.
Even with the expression, sometimes y'all have within the face itself, that deer, again, everyone looks, they all look somewhat the same, but they're also a little bit different.
It's pretty subtle, but, you know, the trained eye or the hunter that really studies animals and can pick those things out, and I think that differentiates you from other taxidermists, possibly, but it's fun because it kind of, we're always chasing something we're never going to be able to accomplish, which is replicating nature. You know, we're never going to get there. We try, but it's fun. It's a challenge. You know, we can always improve or learn something new. It's been fun, and it's even with technology, and we go to these parks and zoos and take pictures of our own.
Right.
Study the animals moving. Because you
yes.
see a lot more when
you
move than you
there
do.
There you see
a still
muscles being used or not used, or you know, all those kind of things.
So, but yeah, I mean, you can do a lot, you know, with a little bit of clay under that skin and pushing it around.
If you're an artist.
If you're an artist, that's right. But it's fun, you know, and when people give us the liberty to kind of make their mount look how we think it would look the best, you know, that's always fun.
You know, a lot of times y'all have skinned out the head, you know, and y'all have a chance to look at it. I know you look at an awful lot of them, or a tremendous number of them, and I know every one of your guys and your guys and gals.
Sure.
I mean, you've got some absolutely extremely talented ladies
we
here
do.
As well, too.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they really impressed me with the mounts that they put out.
Yeah, they, I'm telling you, I'm convinced the females are a little more talented than some of the males. But yeah, you know, it's one of those things you kind of have to, if you're a student of what you do, you know, you just kind of naturally want to learn more and understand rather than just kind of slap mounts together and push them out the door.
Yeah. Again, that's one of the things I truly appreciate about you and the guys.
Yeah, it's
the
gals
being working for you kind of thing.
Sure.
I want to switch horses with you totally for a second. You're working on a book, or I think you may have just about finished it, at
it's
least
in the
first go-round.
It's in the, I don't know what point, and it was in its infancy last we talked, but now
right,
I would
exactly.
say it's approaching getting ready to be sent to the printer. So working with editors and laying out pictures, and there's a lot that goes into that stuff.
There it is.
I had no idea. But I just slapped some words down and box it up, but
well, that's how it starts. Though.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to get the words down, and you can kind of maybe do an outline or something, you know, that you're working on. But then you got to sit down, and you got to put all the words down, and then the photography is.
Yeah.
Of course, with what you and we've talked about your book a little bit in the past, but here with the animals that you have available for photography.
Yeah.
I mean, my
it's
gracious.
I guess it's a developmental editor is who I'm working with right now.
Right.
And kind of blew them away a little bit. We have 130 pictures that it's going to be in our book.
Love it.
So they'd never worked with that number before. So they were a little taken aback. But I think it's coming together. Hopefully by the end of this month, we should have kind of a rough draft of the whole thing.
Fantastic.
And getting advice from you. I know you've been through that rodeo a few times.
I'm
helpful.
Seriously thinking about doing another one. But I've written so darn much, I think this is going to be pulling some of the stuff that I've done in the past and kind of rewriting it kind of thing. So that'll make it a little bit easier, a little bit quicker on my side of it. But what's the title?
It's going to be called Taxidermy Life.
Taxidermy Life.
Yep. And, you know, there's a lot of how-tos. I did some research about books out there that in the taxidermy world that a lot of them are just, you know, how to mount this or how to do that or specific mounts or painting or tasks,
right.
I guess. I couldn't really find one that kind of told you about taxidermy. What is it like to be a taxidermist and behind-the-scenes type things? And kind of so part of it is that... just the life of a taxidermist. Part of it is our story, you know, and how we got started and where we are today and some of the processes that we've found to be helpful and advice for people. There's different types of taxidermists. There's,
right.
You know, your hobbyists, they're your small shops, your large shops, and kind of we've kind of developed through those the whole stage
right
so you know just advice if I could go back and tell myself at each one of those steps some helpful things, you know, what those are. So we'll touch on that a little bit in there and you know we of course encounter some unusual situations and in this industry with just weird stories or animals, and so there's some of that in there as well, you know, just some humor, but and just pictures around the shop. People really seem to like to see the behind the scenes stuff.
Absolutely, yes.
But yeah, you know, it's not an exceptionally long words. There's 25,000 words, I think, but a lot of pictures, and we'll see. It's fun.
These days, I've learned that most people don't have a long attention span.
No, that's a good point.
Now, they like to look at photographs, you
pictures,
know. And so to me, from what I'm hearing, your words kind of tie the photographs together
they do,
in certain ways, kind of way.
They do.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how's it going to be available, and where is it going to be available?
That's a good question. So we'll have it available. We'll have hard copies available for sale. I'm going to plan on kind of doing a tour to some of these taxidermy conventions.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of push it there, just share it in the industry, looking at putting it on Amazon and kind of all the e-book stuff, which I'm learning leaps and bounds about that whole world.
Yes.
So it'll be available pretty much through all of those avenues. But yeah, you know, more than anything, it's kind of after I'm long gone, there's going to be some record of what's happened here and what we experienced, and it'll be there for future generations.
Great grandchild will say, yeah,
pick it up one day. Look at this.
My great-great-granddad. Look what he did.
Yeah. But
I love that.
It's good. It's fun. It's been a challenge, but
yes, sir.
Man, I'm always about learning new things. So.
I know. Again, that's one of the things I truly enjoy about having you as a friend.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm the same way. Everything I do, I'm continually learning. Every time I go somewhere, I learn something new, or you know, something maybe a little bit different. And to me, that's really a great part of the fun of
makes life.
Life
interesting. As far as I'm
concerned.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, we're going to make this a little bit short today. So, tell me how the best way to get in touch with you for people who would like for you to for you to do some mounts for them.
Sure.
Maybe see some of the mounts that you have.
And absolutely.
And I'm sure your book's going to be available probably on your website as well.
It will. Yeah, we'll be pushing that on our website, social media, probably some other avenues, you know, like I said, kind of doing a little tour, so to speak, talking to some people in the industry. But you know, the big avenues are for us are our website, of course, at doublenickeltaxidermy.com. You can email us there. You're welcome to call the shop anytime. We have social media, Instagram, Facebook, and pretty active on responding to people on that. So that's pretty much the ways to reach into this company if you need a question.
Perfect. And it's double NICKLE.
Yeah. That's a long story in itself, but yeah.
We'll come back. I'll save that one for there. I know there's a good story there.
Yeah.
We'll save that. We'll get around a real campfire here for too very long. And
that sounds good.
You hear the fire crackling in the background and all that kind of thing. So.
That sounds good.
John, thank you very much again. If you look for somebody to do a truly quality mount, and also, I cannot wait to see your book, quite frankly.
Sure.
So we'll make people aware of it right here. And until next time we get together, John, thank you for everything that you do. Thank you for everything you do for DSC and have done in the past and other organizations. We really appreciate that as well, too. And look forward to everybody joining us right back here around DSC Campfire.
Thanks for joining us around the campfire. To leave a comment or suggestion for an upcoming episode, go to Instagram at Larry Wysoon Outdoors. Please join me right here next week for another DSC's Campfires.
DSC Campfires with Larry Wysoon has also been brought to you by the Texas Wildlife Association, working for tomorrow's wildlife today. TRHP Outdoors, Kenitrek Boots for the trails less traveled, Boyt, the finest in hunting gear, Pyramid Air for all things air gun, and Ripcord, rescue travel protection.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
When you go out there and the fish are where you think they are, any one of these casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know right here at Hawks Cave.
Oh, that's awesome!
Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience. Brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts. Every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.